All right, welcome. Tonight's class, we're doing Parshas Mishpatim, and the title is My 100-Year-Old Hero. And we're going to go to the videotape. And this is it. If you're feeling a little bit down and you won't find it, you want a little inspiration, I got the person for you. Just watch this. This is a feel-good experience if there ever was one. Here we go. Captain Sir Tom Moore, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Let's go to the videotape.
Lovely story coming up. A 99-year-old war veteran has decided to walk 100 lengths of his back garden. He wants to raise money for the NHS.
Every day, I'm doing about 10, what I call a lap of the house. I do 10 each day, so that eventually I'll get the 100.
You're an inspiration to us all, and we thank you.
There he goes. Let's give him a big round of applause. A 100 laps of his garden during lockdown. All of the money going to NHS charities. A guard of honour from the 1st Battalion, the Yorkshire Regiment. Inches to go. And there he is. Congratulations. Well done.
I'm surrounded by the right sort of people. So, yes, I feel fine. I hope you're all feeling fine too. The service that I got from all these doctors and nurses was absolutely outstanding. And they're such nice people too.
It's a wonderful story at a time where, frankly, everybody needed it. I'm a great believer that people are fundamentally kind, and this is just the most wonderful way to show it.
I don't know what you're meant to feel like when you get to be 100. I've never been 100 before, so I really can't tell you what difference it is from yesterday, today, or maybe tomorrow.
Captain Tom, a point of light in all our lives. That is exactly what you are. So on behalf of the whole country, thank you, and have a very special 100th birthday.
To get letters from the royal family really is something which I never ever anticipated, because they are to me such good people.
There is a letter here from the Chief of the General Staff that conveys your appointment to become the Honorary Colonel of our Army Foundation College up in Harrogate.
That really is one of the greatest honours anybody could get.
I just need to say congratulations, because you are the UK's official number one.
That really is truly amazing, isn't it?
Captain Sir Tom Moore, good morning. Congratulations. How does it feel to be a Knight of the Realm this morning?
I certainly feel that I've been given a very outstanding honour by the Queen and the Prime Minister.
It's the most beautiful story in the most bleak of times, and he's given us a beacon of light. It's wonderful.
I never ever anticipate ever in my life anything like this. It really is amazing. And I must say to everyone, thank you very much to everyone wherever you are.
All right, guys, what do you think?
So great.
That guy's the real deal, eh? All right, let's...
Very impressive.
Have you ever... Does anybody... I mean, he's from England. Was anybody aware of him?
Yeah. He was like... It was like worldwide.
All right,
yeah.
Okay, good. He just... Unfortunately, he passed away last week from COVID, tragically.
Saw that, yeah.
Okay, so let's go to... There's a number of questions here. Let's go to the videotape. Okay. Good. Okay. All right, question number one. What motivated Captain Tom Moore to do a fundraiser at the age of 99?
He wanted to help the people that were helping him because the NEH was taking care of him.
All right, so the National Health...
Did I say that right?
National Service. Health Service or system. Yeah. Well, he had, because as you said, he had, went to the hospital and had a hip replacement, and he had a skin cancer, which they removed. And then, plus... It was, COVID had started to ramp up, and everybody in all the doctors were working in the hospital, these crazy shifts. So he was going to be 100 at the end of April. At the beginning of April, he wanted to do this walkathon. And his goal was to raise £1,000, roughly $1,500. He ended up raising $53 million. So here's my question. Would most people who walk with a walker do this type of fundraiser? Alan says no. Why not, Alan?
I mean, I'm sure it was challenging. I mean, walking that distance at his age, I mean, it's not really common, especially if he needs a walker.
So number one, it's, him walking 100 lengths of his long backyard, 10 lengths a day for 10 days, it was a challenging physical feat for him. That's one thing. But what other?
It's also the weather, it's in January, so it's cold. I mean, he's risking, him catching, getting sick. It's cold.
It happened in April, so it's a little bit warmer. Yeah. But still,
he gave a lot already to his country.
In other words,
in World War II, and he fought. I mean, they were all bad places, but I watch I love war documentaries, but Burma was particularly bad. I mean, you're fighting, the enemy. People were getting dysentery and all that. What's that mosquito-borne disease?
He got dengue fever. He actually was in the hospital for dengue fever for weeks or months, actually.
Yeah. So it's he did all that, fighting, the Nazis and all those people. You could say, anybody could say, you've done enough for, society, your country. You don't have to do any more. You're good.
All right. Right. So most people, I think, would feel that, you're 99 years and 11th month old, you're good. And he had done did a lot for his country. I think he also remained in the reserves for a long time. I mean, he was a person who was, special. Now, that now I want to hear from somebody else. What other activities in Moore's history indicate that he would respond to COVID as he did? Because he didn't just suddenly wake up at 99 years old at 11 months and say, I want to do this. Obviously, there was a personal history and a certain approach and mentality and worldview that precipitated this. All right, Adrian, what do you guys say?
So I think it has to do with how he responds to a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people, when there's a crisis, they sort of panic or get anxious or depressed and sort of become victimized. But when you are a war veteran, you've been trained to be proactive when there's a crisis, rather than be a victim. So in his own original and creative way, he tried to respond in a proactive manner to the COVID-19 crisis.
Right. Now, did he expect that he would get any national attention whatsoever? No. And let's say 20 of his friends and family would have done his walkathon and he would have raised, you know, 1,035 British pounds. You know, how would he feel about that?
He would have felt that he did something, which is what he is trained to do.
Right. And he's clearly, I think you got a sense, I think the video montage did a nice job of that. This is not a person who is looking for the limelight. This is, you know, and he wanted to give back. He wanted to show his gratitude. He wanted to serve his country one more time, even though that his physical abilities were limited, even though the COVID had put many restrictions. He felt, I could do this. And whether he's going to raise 1,000 pounds or shockingly 39 million pounds, $53 million, that's it. And he wasn't doing it for the notoriety. By the way, he is, if you go to his Wikipedia page, he is the oldest one-hit wonder because his song went to number one at age 100. So, and that's that. So it's a very heartwarming story. Now, I guess the question I want to take it as we're moving back toward the Parsha is, what did the story teach us about who can be expected to do chesed? Who are people that do chesed?
Everyone.
Say it again? Sean?
Everyone? Everybody's expected to do it.
Well, everybody's expected to do chesed. That's true. But, and you see that, and the fact that you're old or you have physical challenges, it's not a problem. But if you put a profile of a person who does chesed, a person who does helping out, etc., what are the markers of that? There are some clear markers for that. Go ahead, Adrian.
I would say courage, the ability to take risk and also sort of take on detriments for others. And I think that takes an element of courage.
There is a courage element, but I think what is the biggest quality here about this guy, which we can infer? Alan?
I mean, he's fairly selfless and not thinking of others and not thinking about his own promotion. He's not looking to promote himself.
Yeah, this is a guy who's thinking about, this is a Klal oriented person. This is a person who's thinking about, we have a community. It needs help. What can I do? Most people are thinking about their own life and trying to get through their day. They don't have much energy left. And when they're done with their day, the question is, how can I, enjoy myself to endure another day. You know what I mean? That's most people's thinking. Tom Moore, this guy's an old dude, could have been like, hey, I did my thing. I'm done. Let me pour myself a delicious cup of British tea and look outside the, you know, the British countryside and just sort of like lay back and just chill. This is guy, no. There's a crisis happening to England, as it happened to the rest of the world. And what can I do for the community? And that's a certain mentality. Alan.
I mean, I don't know if this is relevant, but I also feel like it kind of sheds light on we're never meant to kind of retire. Excellent. We're always meant to kind of do something.
Yes.
And I think, you know, even at his age, he did what he could at his ability. And I don't know, I think sometimes in America, we think, oh, as long as I can get to retirement, then I'm just going to relax and do nothing.
Right.
That's not really like in a Torah at all. That you just relax.
Alan, that is an excellent point. There is no retirement in Judaism. In other words, not saying that you should work slavishly. In other words, you have to work to support your family and the rest of the time to dedicate to to Torah study and helping the community. And this guy used his last year supporting and strengthening the British health system and et cetera. So this is a remarkable person.
Rabbi Pinney?
Yes.
Also to Alan's point, I was sitting here thinking, I think it probably also gave him meaning in life too, which is also very important. And we know that when we lose meaning, it really leads to like a very dark, can lead to a dark downward spiral.
1,000% correct. Because when you are, one of the things that you will notice in life, when you give, you get. He wasn't doing it to get, he was doing it to give, but it was obviously fulfilling for him. And people sensed, I think the reason why he, in other words, there was a perfect storm of circumstances why he captured people's imagination, because here's clearly a fairly selfless dude trying to do a little bit of good, and he's a very charming, soft-spoken, positive person. And England, like the rest of the whole world, going into COVID, anxious, scared, tremendous unknown factor. And this guy is saying, you know what? I'm going to take my walker, and I'm going to walk out in the backyard, and I want to see if I can get to 100 lengths of my backyard, 100 laps, before I hit my 100th birthday, and raise a couple of dollars/pounds for the national health system. And by doing so, he felt great. You saw that he felt great, not because he got accolades, but the fact that he was able to be such an instrument of so much outpouring of support and generosity. He was able to capture generosity. Okay, so many, many excellent points here. So the Parsha, just to kick the Parsha's name is Mishpatim, and we're just going to focus upon the first sentence of the Parsha. It says, Ve'ela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem. These are the laws, Mishpatim laws, mean civil monetary law, which you must set before them, the Jewish people. Okay? So let's take a look at, let's go to, let me have somebody read the Sforno. Let me have reach out to Marvin Baum.
Okay, there we go. Let me just move my screen a little bit here. I was just eating before, that's why I had it on a black screen, because I hadn't had lunch yet today.
Okay.
Vayela Hamishpatim, in the previous paragraph, the Torah spoke about the prohibition of coveting property belonging to someone else, 2013. This did not involve action. By contrast, Ba'ela HaMishpatim, now the Torah speaks about the laws governing the concrete nature of Asher Lerua.
Lereyecha.
Lirecha, tangible matters belong to your fellow man.
Okay, so let me unpack that. So basically, the Mishpatim follow what we call, the Hebrew is Aseret Dibrot, the Ten Commandments, what people call the Ten Commandments, although literally translated, Dibrot could be translated as Ten Statements, would be a little more accurate, okay? And the last one, the number 10, is don't covet, lo tachmod, which is coveting is defined as, we've done classes on this in the past. Well, let me ask, what is the definition of coveting?
To want something from somebody else, be it their wife or be it their property or anything else.
It's not just wanting.
It's like you think you deserve it more than they do.
Then again?
It's like you think you deserve it more than they do.
Well, that's part of your motivation.
But is it acting on it? Is that what it really means?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, more. What's the measurement of acting on the desire?
To actually receive it.
Well, you work out a plan, even if you pay for it. In other words, you create a plan of pressuring the person to sell or give you something that is not really for sale. Okay?
You know, we talk about coveting somebody's wife. The person's probably not going to give you their wife no matter what money is involved. Wouldn't that be like more of an inappropriate, illegal kind of relationship, illicit relationship?
So I'll give you $1 million to divorce your wife. $2 million to divorce your wife.
It wasn't.
Can it also be like in your mind too?
Say it again.
Like, couldn't it also be like in your mind, like you may not like approach with $1 million, but you could be like, oh man, if that person was just my wife, things would be so much wonderful. And you know,
that's being jealous, or you know, that's not, in other words, there's two. One thing is developing a plan of action, or so you have wife, house, all their other possessions, of trying to extract it from the other person. So there's one prohibition is making a plan of extraction. Let me make a simple case. Let's say your next door neighbor has a beautiful, Corvette that you love, and it's not for sale, but then you like nudge him till he sells it. That's lo tachmo. That's coveting. Okay.
If you say that you like it and then he offers to sell it to you?
He says to you, Scott, this is my baby. It's not for sale.
I meant like, you mentioned that you like it. Listen, you're a good guy here. Take this Corvette.
No. That's not a problem. That's called shopping.
But like, that isn't what I don't. That example just doesn't make sense.
So, I just consulted with Rabbi.
Let me clarify. There is a thing called things which are not for sale. Okay, and they can be not for sale for, you know, rational reasons, and it'd be not for sale for sentimental or emotional reasons. In other words, I love this car. You see this guy, you know, every Saturday washing it and buffing it. He has a bizarro relationship with the car. So coveting is that you basically get like all his friends to say, come on, sell it to Penny. He's offering you $75,000 cash for it. You're an idiot. Come on. You get yourself another one. You know what I'm saying? You nudge the guy. You get a plan of creating a coalition to push the guy to do something that which he had was firmly committed to not selling. That's coveting in its full halakhic form. So
for example, in real estate, if you have a piece of land that you want to buy and, you know, you want to develop that piece of land and the person doesn't sell it, and then you go to like the county commissioner to like, you know, change the zoning or.
Yeah, that's to create a whole plan of basically creating a circumstance where he has to sell. Yes, that's the problem.
Like doing business?
No, you could say, you know, Joe, I love this property. And if you're in the market you're in the market to sell, you know, I'll do my best to be there for you. You know what I'm saying? But we're talking about the hammering, nudging kind. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's using your influence. Like, I would use my influence to pressure someone to sell their property.
Rabbi Penny. So
there is a, obviously, to, in other words, to make a guy an offer is okay. When a person has said, I'm not selling this for nothing, buddy, because, and then you work, then you utilize his friends and his business contacts and say, come on, don't be an idiot. Alan's a great guy. Sell him. Come on. You know what I mean? You work, you create a whole coalition of nudging. So that's, since the plan, since the prohibition is really that plan of the plan of manipulation to get that, that's what the Torah forbids. A, I wanted so, in other words, I wanted so much to the degree that I'm going to create a plan to overcome and overwhelm all of his defenses not to sell that which he which he feels is beloved to himself.
I'm just having a hard time of understanding what's the business.
If you do it as a business.
Alan, question, and then I'm going to go to.
I guess I don't see how in business that's kind of how you're kind of, especially in real estate, you're kind of taught to like overcome objections and get people, you know, to find the best property. That's how you make the most money. So I guess I'm just having a hard time correlating.
By the way, that's exactly what the Mishpatim are. The Mishpatim are is that are is fundamentally going to deal with the issue of there is a person's money and property, money and property rights that belong to each individual person, and that has to be respected. And if a person has something that they, for whatever reason, has taken off the market, and you have to make an offer. In other words, I don't want to get into a whole halachas here. Exactly. At what point is being, you know, offering versus creating an entire plan of building a coalition of pushing the guy to sell it? Because fundamentally what that means is the guy who's doing that can accept that there is property or objects that don't belong to me. And that person is a Tzelem Elohim. He's created in the divine image. He has unique human dignity and he has a right to his stuff. And yeah. God has granted that.
And I guess there's some gray lines when it comes to like, if there was a tax lien, you bought it out that way, you know? I don't want to make this whole.
As we'll see, if you, when you read the Parsha, it gets super duper, you know, legalistic. And the obvious question that I'm going to try to solve tonight is like, why after the Mishpatim? In other words, my basic question tonight is, if you were writing the Torah, okay, and you had the Aseret HaDibrot, right? The Jewish people received the Aseret HaDibrot. What would you put next? Okay, let's say I gave you there are 613 mitzvot. We've already had, let's make it 10. And I'm giving you 603 cards. What would you put next? If you had to take the 600 mitzvot, what would you put next after the 10 commandments? What would you guys put up there? If you were writing it, what would you put?
I mean, I think I would put the most serious ones up first.
Yes, you would.
Like, don't kill someone.
Well, don't kill is already in the Aseret HaDibrot.
So, Rabbi, I have an interesting add-on to that 10th one that I was hoping you were going to mention, but it's okay. I wouldn't include it. I heard over the weekend by Rabbi Pesach Kron that the Rabbeinu Bechaya says that losachmod, right, comes to teach us that we shouldn't be jealous of other people's possessions, not just the wife, but possessions, because then, especially when it comes to money possessions, we're going to be jealous of our own and not give tzedakah.
It creates an obsession of money and then not wanting to share it. Okay.
Yeah. And that, if I took the way Rav Pinney has explained this, there's a difference before from the way it comes from God to Shabbos to the Venon Lechavero, like in that other column that we did, right? And that comes out very good, right? Because then the next thing would be charity and giving, and that would be. Be a logical next step.
Okay.
I mean, my other logical next step would have been last week.
Charity is in there in the Mishpatim. So just to give you the chronology, just to give you guys a chronology, the Jewish people heard the Ten Commandments. What date in the Jewish calendar?
The 6th or the 7th of Sivan.
6th day of Sivan in the morning. Then Moshe goes back into the mountain, receives the Mishpatim, which are chapters 21, 22, and 23, which is 57 mitzvot that compose are all civil law, among other things, mostly civil law, okay? All right? Then he goes and tells them that afternoon or that evening. He writes it down. Then the next day, he tells to them again, which is on the 7th day of Sivan. And then the Jews famously say what phrase, which is found at the end of our parsha. The most famous phrase in Jewish history, not the most famous, but
what do they say?
What do they, after he said that, after he told
Na'aseh v'nishma.
Na'aseh v'nishma.
Where's the Kiddush?
And we will listen, we will learn. All right? In other words, they already, when they got, so remember, they got the Seret Dibros, the Mishpatim. At the end, they said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will listen and we will do. I'm sorry, we will do and then we will listen, which means we'll learn more. In other words, we have accepting upon ourselves this system of mitzvot. Okay, I want to go to the Ramban, Nachmanides, to explain why what's going down here. So let me have Sean, Bavakasha. Pick it up from Ramban, cites a statement in the sages. Oh, no. Go back up to the thing. Therefore, he said to Moshe. Good. Take it from there.
Therefore, he said to Moshe, place before them just judgments that they should practice among themselves, and thereby they will not covet what is not legally theirs.
Okay. So, in other words, part of the goal, in other words, the Mishpatim are, on one hand, an elaboration of the 10th commandment of coveting. So now we say, well, what is yours and what is mine? That has to be clarified. That's what the Mishpatim are clarifying, okay? And if I do damage, what's my responsibility? Which basically, for all the, I have two lawyers on the call. I got my tort law, that's Mishpatim. Various responsibilities, contractual laws. These all come from Mishpatim. Go on. Sean, continue reading. Sean?
Yes. Right. And thus did the sages say in Midrash Rabbah, the entire Torah depends on monetary laws. Therefore, the Holy One, blessed is he, gave the monetary laws immediately after the 10 Dibros.
Okay. So the Ramban summarizes a Midrash, which we're now going to go in. We're going to unpack this. We're going to do a Midrash, and we're going to study this, and we're going to understand the central nature of Mishpatim. We're going to show the three dimensions of Mishpatim tonight. Okay, that's where we're trying to go. So let me have Adrian, you want to read? Go ahead, read the English here.
And the Mishpatim, civil and monetary laws. A psalm of Shlomo. Give the king your laws so that he may judge your people with righteousness.
All right, so stop right there. So the Midrash, first of all, does everybody know what the Midrash is? If you don't know, I'm going to explain what it is. The Midrash, like this is from the Shmot Rabbah. Shmot Rabbah, the Midrash Rabbah on various books of the Tanakh, the five books of the Torah and other books in the Tanakh, are a collection of statements concerning various verses. They'll bring various educational stories and insights based upon typically rabbis in the Mishnaic and Talmudic period. Okay, now obviously these statements could of course harken back earlier, but it's their insights. So it's not teaching you Jewish law; it's teaching you Jewish values and philosophy. That's what the Midrashim are there for. Okay. Everybody clear about that? So it's not halachically binding. It's not gonna, it doesn't tell you to do anything. It's giving you a worldview, okay? All right, so this is the Midrash. Let's keep on going. So therefore, the Midrash guy, the anonymous Midrash editor, brings in a verse from Psalms. He says, the Psalm of Shlomo, give your king your law so he may judge your people with righteousness. Okay? All right, so we're going to have to go back, though. What was he trying to accomplish with that? All right? Now, okay, next statement.
Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the prince, the editor of the Mishnah, said, just as the Holy One, blessed be he, warned the Jewish people about observing the Ten Commandments, so too that he warned them concerning civil and monetary law. Why? Because the whole world is dependent on it. As the verse in Proverbs states, the king by justice establishes the land.
Okay, this is a key statement here. We're going to go back. So the first idea is that the whole world is dependent upon Mishpatim. And he, all right, so we're going to have to get into that. We have to unpack that, keep that. That's statement number, that's statement number one. Go ahead, statement number two. Idea number two.
Through it, Mishpatim, Zion will be rebuilt. For it says, Zion will be redeemed with justice.
Okay. The word Tzion, you ever heard the word Tzion? Tzion in the Tanakh can refer to the Jewish people, the land of Israel, Jerusalem, the temple. Okay. So here it means restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. Go on. And the last idea, the last number three, go on.
Through it, Mishpatim, laws, the righteous will become great, for it says, happy are those who keep justice.
Okay. All right. So I got a bunch of questions here.
You got a low grammatical error.
Yeah, okay, yeah. For its death. Okay. Why is justice, including civil and monetary laws, contingent on first internalizing the first two dibrot, the first two statements of commands? First of all, what were the first two commandments, two dibrot, I'm going to use the Hebrew word, in the Aseret HaDibrot? What are the first two commands in the Ten Commandments? Come on, guys. This is pretty basic.
I am Hashem, your God, who has removed you out of the land of Egypt.
Yes. I am Lord your God, which, according to the oral tradition, is the obligation to believe and know that there is a God. Okay? That's number one. The mitzvah of believing, knowing God, number one. What's the second command of Judaism in the Aseret HaDibrot?
You should not place idols, worship idols.
There should be no other gods before me. In other words, there should be no the prohibition of idolatry. So there's the positive commandment of knowing, believing in God. That's one. And the second one is rejecting idolatry. So why is civil law, even though that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said it's very, very important, it still comes after the Ten Commandments. It's not before the Ten Commandments. So why are those two dibrot so critical? Without that, you can't have anything.
Well, an idea that comes to mind, and it's not an original idea, it's an idea from you, from your previous classes, is the concept of Selem Elohim, of God's image, and how everyone sort of has that spirit of God, and that's why you have to respect people and their property. But if you don't believe in a God in the first place, then you can't really believe that people are imbued with that godliness either.
Exactly. In other words, there could be no. In other words, it's a very simple thing: no God, no Judaism. So there's no idea, in other words, from a Jewish perspective, we do not do civil law, act in a just manner, per se, for let's use some of the famous various Renaissance thinkers, social contract. This is David Hume, John Locke, all these different thinkers of making the idea of creating justice or civil law in a society independent of God. That's not the Jewish concept. The Mishpatim are very, very important. We just saw Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says the whole world depends upon them. Yeah, it depends upon them, but that comes, that flows from our concept of God and our rejection of idolatry. It is not in place of our concept of God and our rejection of idolatry. In other words, it's an emanation from that concept. It is not a replacement for that concept, okay? That is like super critical because, America, well, let's take Europe, for example. This is an observation made by many, and I don't remember who was the author of this idea. Europe, as let's say the EU, the European Union, even though that officially they have a religion of the state, its citizens are highly secular. Most of them are agnostic, a higher percentage than any place else. So therefore, when the effect of religion recedes, the role of the government has to fill that space, because now you're following law because of governmental law, not because you believe that there is a divine law giver. But
that's what I was going to
interject. There's also the idea.
One at a time, all right, Marvin, and then we go to Alan.
That's what I was going to interject. It seems like if, particularly in a more ancient society, if you have nobody to answer to ultimately, then you have a formula for anarchy. Now we see in this country, even in this day and age, there are people who are anarchists who don't answer to anybody. And with that, you have a very big problem situation where society will devolve and where it will not be able to be cohesive. And so if you have no one to answer to, basically you do whatever in your own interest or your interest for the moment.
So Marvin, excellent point. And I think you've already touched upon question number 6 is why does the world depend on civil and monetary laws? I think you basically said it. It's so critical, but it needs
that
to be.
If you don't have that, you have anarchy. And if you have anarchy, society cannot be cohesive. If you see something that you want, you just go and you take it, you know?
Exactly.
And whoever's stronger wins at any given moment, and then somebody else comes and takes over for them.
Exactly. Yeah,
classic dog eat dog.
Right. Approach. The rule of the jungle. The might makes right. So correct. The idea of an anarchist world is an absolute nightmare, and even Pirkei Avos goes as far that we will even pray for the health and well-being of a tyrannical king, because even though he's a king, even though he's a tyrant, he still creates a measure of law and order, and that's better than no law and order. Now, but the difference is Judaism was the first to undermine the principle of the divine right of kings, in the sense of that there's nobody there's nobody above the law. Moshe's below is under the law. Aaron is under the law. Everybody's affected by the law. There's only one king, and that's Hashem. And that's why the Mishpatim have to come after that first accepting of the reality of Hashem. I'm in his world, and this is his law. And that's a critical point. Now, so this gets to our second now exploring. That was our first concept. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said, why did the Mishpatim come right after the Seder of Dibros? Because God warned the Jewish people, just like the Dibros, because the entire world is dependent upon it. Because basically, if you do not have a cohesive social fabric, a social structure, everybody's doomed. Anarchy is the worst nightmare. The way that the Pirkei Avos says it very eloquently, we pray for the well-being of the king, of the leader, of the ruler, because without that, each person would swallow their friend. As Marvin said, you see something, you take it. And if you're stronger, you can take it. And who gets victimized? The weak.
And for a lot of people, it means you're just basically sleeping with one eye open. You don't have that certain inner peace.
Right.
Because you don't know what's going to happen next. Who's going to break into your house? Who's going to take whatever you need to survive?
Exactly correct. That's right. Alan, question, point to you.
No, it was just, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, but I do think that some people tend to operate, especially like in France, on a humanistic social contract.
Yes.
Where they removed God out and it's more, we have to take care of each other just to keep order.
Right. So
order, which I think comes from Hashem, but they won't recognize that.
So that principle it goes back to the philosopher David Hume, which social contract. Now, the challenge to that is, in other words, since the collective will benefit from all of us, you know, acting in a certain way, and the whole polity will survive that way, therefore you have to act in that way. But that makes it all utilitarian. In other words, each individual person doesn't have any intrinsic divine value. You know what I'm saying? It's right. Just because if I steal from everybody, if I steal from him and he steals from me, and we have a world where there's no one is complete, then there's no then we'll basically kill each other. But that's not saying that there's intrinsically any value to the individual. These collectivist orientations. Going back to Marx's ideology for a moment. Okay, this is a little bit of, we're making this into a high-end political science kind of conversation here for a moment. But the collectivist approach, a Marxist approach, basically says that the individual has no value, has no independent value. And the terrorist says that's not true. There's a value for the collective, but there's a value to the individual. And you can't. And the truth is, you can't take a person's stuff. The in other words, there are certain, you know, so by definition, you can't, there are certain extenuating circumstances, but by and large, if you own something, you own it, and it can't be taken from you. You know what I'm saying?
I think that
that's where you know, the capitalist system, you know there are certain elements that this would be a thesis. You know, where does Judaism agree to ideas in capitalism, where does it agree to ideas in socialism, and where does it argue with both of them? So it's a little bit of I don't want to get off the rails here. You know, we're gonna keep it, bring it back. Okay. Next, why is careful invitation of Mishpatim a precondition for Jewish people being redeemed and regaining sovereignty? Isaiah says, that Zion will be redeemed with the application of justice, having a just society. We get a just society, Mashiach is showing up. Why is that? Showing the power of Mishpatim.
Because nobody's being wronged?
Yes.
Right?
And that's what Hashem wants from us, that we take care of the poor, the orphan, the widow, people who are going through difficult times. It's where people are not absorbed, not self-absorbed, but communally absorbed, trying to help everybody out. And and when you have a just society, specifically that criticism, if you look at the whole chapter in Isaiah 1, it's a critique to the Jewish leadership that were interested only in the wealthy and the powerful and ignored the weak and disadvantaged. All right, Alan.
I just have a question. So it seems like, at least in Judaism, there's just a big focus on helping out the community and the poor in our community, like fellow Jews.
And non-Jews as well.
I just don't really see that in practice. Like,
well, I one thing is very nice. Just to give you a quick example. There's a beautiful institution. We're going to get that toward the end, called Mazbia Kitchens. And you can go on to line where they have basically restaurants where you can go in and you can eat and there's no paying.
Right.
And it's open, and it's and Jew and non-Jews use it all the time, even though it's Jewishly run. So that's it.
And okay. Yeah, no, I just feel sometimes there's more of a focus on helping your fellow Jew out.
They're both important, but the priority is your brother, and your brother is your fellow Jew. So they get first, but they don't, but not to the exclusion of others. You know what I mean?
Right.
And a person should help everybody out and give to non-Jews as well. But the priority is that you got to first help your brother out. It's sort of like family first. Okay. Right. Adrian, I'm going to keep on. Yes. Go on, Adrian.
Can I just, you know, offer a different perspective that laws are not the means for redemption, but are the redemption itself. It's not how we bring Moshiach, but it's rather Moshiach. The concept of Moshiach is a just and fair world.
Yes, but to get there, apparently, it's not just suddenly that God's going to flip a switch and suddenly we have Moshiach. We have to earn Moshiach. The Rambam famously has a statement in the Mishneh Torah, Ein Yisrael Nigalim Ela B'tshuva. The Jewish people are only redeemed through repentance. What is the chief manner of repentance? Acting justly. And that's what the Pasuk says. And he says also, Ein Yisrael Nigalim Ela B'tzdaka, you know, also helping out the poor. Okay, now I want to bring it back to our good. Don't forget. I hope you have not forgotten our good friend Captain Moore. Is you know we look at, you know so. Well, question number 8: why did the righteous develop specifically by means of mishpatim? In other words, it says that the righteous tzaddikim become even greater through mishpatim, as it says in the Hebrew, Ashrei Shomri Mishpat. Happy are those who keep justice. Why is that the catalyst of greatness?
It's a higher ethic. It's a higher ethic than your egoism and your striving to fulfill your personal desires and needs. This is a higher ethic, a higher way of conducting yourself.
1,000% correct. There's two dimensions by Mishpatim. There's two elements here. One is removal of injustice, removal of a negative. And the positive is when you act in a just manner, you're following, with the Hebrew words is halakta bedrachav, walking in God's footsteps. God acts justly, you have to act justly. He acts with righteousness and kindness, you have to. So when we do that, we're emulating God himself. Okay? That's why Avram said when he saw about stone, the destruction of stone, he says, "Hashofei kol arz lo yaseh lo mishpat." The judge of the universe, will you not do justice? So in his mind, God was a justice doing being. So therefore, for him, it was a contradiction, and he asked the question, and the resolution was, these people, sadly, are worthy of. They're not 50 righteous, they're not 45, they're not 40, they're not 30, they're not 20, they're not 10 even. And therefore, they're worthy of, sadly, destruction. But the assumption is that God acts in a just manner. So when you act justly, you are emulating God. You are being godly. So a righteous person who really acts in with mishpat, he's a extra special tzaddik, okay? Now, why is Captain Moore going beyond Mishpatim? Was Captain Moore doing Mishpat? Was he doing justice? What was he doing? There's a Hebrew word he's doing. What is he doing?
Chesed, right?
Correct. Scott Shapiro, right on the money. Mishpat is giving a person their due. In other words, I have an employee. I pay them in a timely fashion. I open my door in the supermarket and I ding the other guy's door. I don't just drive away. I put my information in on his windshield wiper, and I admit to the fact that I dinged his car. By the way, this happened to me. I opened my door into a brand new BMW, gorgeous, with like the most beautiful paint job. And the guy was, I went, bink! And I knew it when I, you know like when you open that door like a little bit aggressively, you know, like, And I didn't realize how close that other car was. And I gave it a good, you know, a good gesunte patch. And I weighed there, and the guy showed up. Obviously, now it was like a perfect, the car was like off the lot. It was like the worst. And I just said, I want to say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And this is my name, and this is my insurance information. And I got nothing to say other than I was careless and I was wrong. That's it. And yes, and he did make a claim with my insurance company. Yes, he did do that. So that happened. Okay, so that's called justice. But that's not. But what Captain Moore is doing is doing chesed. He's going beyond paying what he owes and making sure he's not taking something he's not. He is gathering people to do chesed. Okay, question number 10. Why is it that in the Jewish community there are a few people who seem to do so much of the work? This is critical. This could be one of the most important practical questions in thing. I want to hear somebody. I want to make sure I get this. Why is it that in the Jewish community there's always a few people who seem to do much of the work? In every shul, in every community, it's like the same people who's volunteering. You hear the same names all the time. Why is that?
It's a rule that applies everywhere in life. It's called the Pareto principle.
Right, the Pareto thing, the 80-20 rule. 20% of the people are, in this case, represent 80% of the impact of the work. 20% of your clients represent 80% of your income. It's true. It's like a law of nature. That's true. Now, but why is that? Let's go deeper. It's true.
Jamie. I think it's a very common phenomenon, and I think it's universal across many different disciplines and genres.
Yes.
I think most people do, well, a lot of people don't even do what they should, but many people just do what they should and are satisfied that they've achieved a basic level of correctness, yes, or a basic level of service, or whatever the bare minimum is that's needed, they fulfill the need. Right. But they don't necessarily excel beyond the basic need. And I think chesed especially is when one goes beyond. And I think very few people want to take the time, energy, and truly go above and beyond. And I think some people...
Jamie, I want to say right there. First of all, what you're saying is 100% true. But I want you to add, but I want to go a little deeper. Why is that? Why now is what Adrian said and what you're saying is true. It's a few people that seem to excel. Can we go a little deeper why that is?
Well, I think some people just have.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. I think some people just have that drive, right? They feel like it's the right thing to do. And like that this is how you operate your life, right? So when I moved into a Jewish community, I really thought it was like, oh, it's all the women who don't work, right? That was kind of my first impression, to be quite honest. But found out that is not the case, right? So a lot of women who have five kids and are working full-time jobs are still doing like a ton of the things around the community because that's just how they were raised. And like, this is their belief in Judaism, belief in community. And this is where they find their, you know, their center, if you will.
Sarah, that is the secret sauce right there. What I find in both chesed and in tzedakah as well, the number one marker will be the answer to the following question. What did the child see at home? As Sarah said, if the child sees that the mom and dad are volunteering or on boards or on committees or are helping people out privately, they see that going on, they will emulate that. If they don't see that, it's very, very hard. It's not impossible, but it's much harder on this child as an adult to initiate a new behavior and habits of chesed and of tzedakah. Very hard. But I got a solution here tonight because my mentality is coming from, I recommend the book from James Clear, The Atomic Habits Approach, which I think is a terror idea, is all of us can get 1% better per day by creating very granular, small habits. And I want to talk about we're going to invest the next 10 minutes on a little chesed workshop. And I want you to do the following thing is take out your phones. I know your phones are not that far away. Click to your contacts. Go onto your contacts here. And I want you to start scrolling. And I want you to ask, and you're not going to give me an answer, but I'm going to ask you the following question. Who do you think needs help during this COVID time? Who is very isolated and can use a phone call? Who's an elderly person who you think might need help trying to get a vaccine? Who might have difficulty going to the store? Who has underlying health issues and therefore really has to be super, super COVID sensitive? Who's that one person that if you call that person up tomorrow, you might make their day? That's a chesed. You might be able to help them out. I want to tell you a couple stories. Story number one, I have a friend of mine. He's not that old. He's 65, 66 years old. He was eligible in New York State for the next group to get the vaccine. But as you know, if you've been reading anything in the news, you got to get onto the website and you got to be very adept to quickly get an appointment. You know what I mean? The place where his two son-in-law and daughter-in-law got him an appointment was a pharmacy out here in Long Island who got 100 vaccines. And therefore they put up on their website, connected to the state website, 100 slots. Guess how quickly the first 80 slots got taken. How long did it take the first 80 of the 100 slots to be taken?
30 seconds.
30 seconds is correct. It's the right answer. So visualize a 65, 70, 75-year-old person who's like, you know, you're working with them, you know, my parents, your parents, you know. 1 second, should I check on my computer email or my phone email? And you have to tell them it's on the right. I don't know. Was it an email? Was it a WhatsApp? And you want to jump out of your skin trying to explain. So what chance do they have of getting a COVID appointment themselves? It's not happening. It's not happening because by the time they won't be able to even, you know, even if they get the link. Okay. My wife helped a number of elderly women to get them. It's very hard. You got to be like, you got to have all the tabs open. There's a whole art to hop in there. You know what I'm saying? So my point is that's a chesed. And yes, you could do a chesed through official chesed organizations. But what I want to share with you is that there are people in your world, everybody's world, you have friends, you have family that might could use a call, that you can help them. Okay. And I'm not saying now devote the next 20 hours of your week doing chesed. I'm not suggesting that. But everybody, I'm not saying you're going to, you know, Tom Moore did not say he'd spend his whole day. He said, I'm going to walk 10 laps. Okay. It just was a beautiful thing. But he had that internal element to become, not just to do an act of mishpat and just to do an act of chesed, your goal is to try to become a baal mishpat, a person who is a person of justice and a person of chesed. These are the laws that Hashem wanted to teach the Jewish people right after the Ten Commandments. Once they accepted Hashem as the creator, as the being that take him out of Egypt, and recognize there's no other force in the world other than him, and the other of the Ten Commandments, he wanted to focus upon all the various practical civil law, monetary laws, and chesed in order to have a just and kind and compassionate society. Bringing this to ourselves, I would implore you, it's hard to become a person of chesed automatically, okay? But everybody can do 1% more they did the day before. I want you to commit right now to yourself that in the next 24 hours, you're going to make one call to one person who your call will be helpful to. People who are lonely, are sad, are anxious, are elderly. People who can help, who need what they call need chizuk, who need to be strengthened. Okay? That's a chesed that everybody can do. You don't have to go down to Masbia food pantry to do chesed. It's a great idea because the chesed is all here on your phone. You don't have to travel far. And you could take a little spirit of, you know, Captain Moore and a little spirit of the ethos of the Parsha and become 1% better within your chesed. You know, work your chesed muscle. And as Suzanne said earlier, I'm going to guarantee you something. When you're going to get off that call, you're going to feel great. Because not only are you giving, but you're getting. And that's a chesed experience. Okay? And when you do it, you're going to have a ripple effect because hopefully you will inspire other people. One thing is that the power of inspiration that Captain Moore did it and he got people on board from all over the world. You don't know the power of you doing one person doing acts of kindness. Very powerful. So I want to encourage everybody to do this and and I think that you guys can make a lot of difference to a lot of people. And you might know about situations that other people do not know about. Everybody's privy to certain situations not everybody knows about. And you can make a big difference. So I want to implore everybody to be 1% better than you were today, all of us, and do an act of chesed. And maybe you'll say, this is great. Let me do another one tomorrow. A chesed a day. I'm telling you, the world needs a lot of kindness. That's all I can say. The world needs a lot of kindness. One of my directors who I work with at OU JLIC, he initiated a program with the students around NYU and lower Manhattan called Killing COVID with Kindness. And he got the kids to be delivering food to elderly people. Kids helping them sign up them for vaccines and so many more things. There's so many chesed opportunities, but you don't have to go far. All the chesed opportunities that'll keep you plenty busy are already on your phone.
Rabbi, just a little thing is about people not knowing. So my husband works overnights for NYPD and during all the lockdown, right? He wasn't home. And then the riots were happening. And so he wasn't home for like 3 days. And I forget that nobody really remembers, right, that what you're going through on a day-to-day basis. And I just like posted something about like having maxed out my crazy COVID meter. Right. And all of a sudden our community was like delivering food and coming and just like reaching out. And, it's like sometimes people like you forget that people really just don't know what's going on until you let them know.
That's also true. You have to be able to be open to share. Doesn't mean you have to share with absolutely everybody, but
yes,
but give people the opportunity to be helpful. That's another thing. Any questions, comments, or ideas, Adrian?
Well, I as you conclude the class, I sort of see the difference between the social contract and the Jewish contract.
Yes.
Which is the social contract, which is altruistic egoism. Let's just work together for the better of the collective. You do bare minimum. These are the laws. Here it, but that it's bare minimum. Whereas Judaism, that it's not, it's the floor. It's not the ceiling.
Yes.
in Judaism, everyone has this spark of the divine. And these laws, they're just, you know, the floor that we can all agree that will apply in every circumstance.
Yes, you have mishpatim as a civil law, but then you have chesed above that, going beyond.
But it's the underlying motif between the two paradigms. One is altruistic egoism, and the other one is a service of God and his creatures.
Excellent. Well said. Okay, so I wish you all the best, everyone. And you know, you could message me if you have an experience. You could if it went well. Let me know. Give me the feedback.
I have two people I'm thinking of, and I will. One of them I was thinking about doing anyway. My mom's cousin. She's a very resourceful person, but she's also not big with the computer stuff. So even though she can accomplish all kinds of things on her own, I don't know if she accomplished this. So I will follow up with her either later tonight or tomorrow, more likely. And then I also know somebody else who lives in the community here. She is by herself. Coincidentally, she used to be Bob Dylan's manager at one time. Wow. And I had invited her when her partner died, who was also a Jewish guy. When he died a couple of years ago, I was having a service in the house, a Shabbos service, and I invited her. She had not been to a Shabbos service since she was probably a kid. She had no connection with Judaism. So just doing that little thing, and she's come a couple times since, and obviously I'm not doing much of anything during COVID right now. But again, that little thing connecting, and she lit candles for the first time in decades, many decades. She's not a young person. She's probably about 80 years old. So little things can make a difference sometimes. So I will call her just to make sure. She does use computers and stuff, but I'm not sure if she's quite as resourceful on that. The other thing, Rabbi Penny, I just want to say real quickly, you missed out a great MJ alumni get together.
I heard about it too late. I know. I
didn't hear about it until it was actively already on. Yeah.
There were like over